We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up? What's going on? It's the Bronx Pinstripe Show. We're recording on a Monday morning. It's been a busy last week with the GM meetings and everything. So, Scott, I think we have a lot to talk about today.
We have baseball news, and we have a lot of baseball news. There were a lot of guys that the Yankee fans are very familiar with that are no longer on the team. So we have the hot stove, to me, has officially started, and the Yankees were, I'd say, one of the first guys to jump into it.
It's getting hot, hot, hot. That was I'm so mad I just did that.
That's okay. I'm glad you did it.
Yeah, before we get into that, though, I don't know, did you watch the NFL this weekend? It was pretty entertaining, I think.
Yeah, I had a different position because my Jets lost on Thursday night to Rex Ryan, which was – I can't even describe how angry I was on Thursday night. But
could you tell the uniforms apart? Are you colorblind?
Yeah, no, I'm not colorblind. I did see that with everybody having that problem, and then I saw – I don't know if you saw the Deadspin article where they recreated it so you could see exactly, you know, what people were seeing if they were – red and green colorblind.
Oh, I didn't
it's pretty
that.
Crazy. I'll yeah, it's really like desaturated, I would say, is the best way to describe it. But it's confusing because their helmets look exactly the same. And like there's no definitive mark on it besides the logo, but the logo like kind of blends into the rest of the color. So yeah, I could definitely see how that would be really frustrating for someone who's colorblind.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like Christmas threw up all over the field with those colors. For those who were not colorblind.
I don't think they realized that, you know, I don't know if they even thought about the green and red connection with Christmas, and it did look like that, though. You're right. I don't know if I'm on board with this color splash thing.
Well, for those who are colorblind, they could just tell which team the Jets were because they were the one fumbling the ball and running around with their heads cut off, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. You're awesome.
Hey,
yes, that was frustrating. Oh, God, I mean, you know, there's so many things that could go a different way in football. I mean, obviously, you know that because you guys should have lost the game last night. Mm-hmm. If that kid from Alabama could catch a ball, the safety from the Giants.
Yep.
All you have to do is catch a ball. Catch the ball, kid. Game over.
I feel dirty after that Patriots win over the Giants yesterday.
Yeah.
It was definitely ugly. The Giants are one of those teams, and I know we have a ton of Giants fans listening. The Giants are one of those teams when they play the Patriots, they step up their game. They look like one of the, you know, a juggernaut that cannot be stopped against the Patriots. It's kind of amazing. And I'm sure Giants fans get pretty aggravated because, frankly, they're pretty mediocre otherwise. I mean, you see them lose a game like they lost to the Saints when it's like they can't stop a nosebleed. And then they play unbelievable against the Patriots, who are a much better team than the Saints. So I really can't explain it. It's just one of those things.
The Giants have been like that for a long time, though. Ever since since Eli Manning's been there, they have been so up and down, and it goes a lot with the way he plays. Like I can't describe it, and I know he's always going to be in the conversations of like great quarterbacks because of the Super Bowls. But when you watch him on an every week basis, it's just really hard to get around that concept because some games he looks amazing and he looks like an all-world talent, and then other games he just looks like he's completely lost out there and has no idea what's going on. So he's kind of an anomaly to me, but he does step up in big games. That you cannot take away from him.
He's kind of the complete opposite of his brother, who has more yeah. talent, has more smarts. He's you know, he can read a defense way better than Eli. He's got all that stuff, but then he kind of poops himself in big games. Eli's the complete opposite.
And I think Peyton is, if you look at their like physical football talent, not mental, but like just physical football talent, Eli is the bigger, stronger guy with a bigger arm.
At this point.
He's got more physical tools. So even I think at their prime, I mean, I think Eli was the more physical quarterback. It's just that Peyton was, you know, had the ability and still does. I don't think he's not there physically to, you know, break down the defenses and just outsmart everybody. Whereas Eli, I think, does more of it on his arm because he does have a big arm. But yeah, you saw what happened to Peyton last night. I mean, yesterday, that was brutal to watch. I mean, I just seeing the highlights were brutal.
That's so I didn't watch any of that game. I was focused on the Giants Patriots game, but he's injured or was he benched because he just stunk?
Well, so coming into it, I think he had a rib injury was what they were talking about. And then later in the week, they started talking about an ankle injury. And when I heard them talk about an ankle injury, I was like, oh, man, this is not going to be good because if he doesn't have his feet, or if he can't push off at all, he doesn't have any arm strength. So right. he needs his lower half to get into a throw. And I mean, he's already with a lower half that's healthy. He's barely making the throw. So if he has an injured lower half, an ankle, similar to what he did last year, it very well could be the end of Peyton Manning, because if he doesn't have anything to drive, if he doesn't have his legs to drive into that throw, he's not an NFL quarterback at this point. I don't care how smart you are.
Yeah, so he broke that passing record yesterday, and then he gets benched in the same game.
Yeah, so he was benched. That was a benching. Yeah, that was an absolute benching. Yeah, it was. I think he had 4 interceptions.
I mean, when will you ever see that again, where a guy becomes the all-time passing leader and then gets benched a half hour?
No, you'll
later.
Never see that again. That will never happen.
I mean,
thank God I benched him on my fantasy team, because he ended up with -6 points on the day. And I had Blake Bortles in there, who's my like new hope. So
I remember the only time I got minus points out of a quarterback was a few years ago. I had Jay Cutler on my team, and I think it was against the Giants, where he got sacked like 7 times, threw 2 picks, and only completed like 1 pass for 6 yards, and I got minus points.
Yeah, Jay Cutler is one of those guys who's good for a negative week here and there.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't ever remember that happening before, where a quarterback just puts up a minus. That's pretty brutal.
It's bad. I mean, if you watch the throws too, I mean, they're just like ducks flying in the air. I mean, anybody could have got them. It was a few of them were just jump balls. It was real bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad to watch. If obviously Peyton's not healthy, you're kind of fearful that he's just going to get clocked one time and that's going to be the end of it, sort of like with Wes Welker. I don't know if you saw this, but Welker played yesterday for the Rams. That dude, he's seeing stars. I mean, I don't know why that guy is allowed to play. He's been concussed so many times.
I don't know why his family or he actually doesn't see. I mean, I know he sees light every time he gets hit. He sees light, but he doesn't see the true, you know, future of how how bad it could get later in life, man, with all these concussions. So
I understand,
don't know.
Guys.
I mean, I know he gave a lot of money away at the Kentucky Derby, but he's got to have some banked, for long-term in his family.
Yeah, I would think so. I know some guys just don't want to give it up. They're addicted to the adrenaline rush of playing in the NFL or playing in Major League Baseball or whatever it is. But like you said, at a certain point, death is not worth it. And it's not even like he signed on a Super Bowl contender. I mean, the Jeff Fisher-led Rams are destined for 8-8, so right. I'm not really sure why he's doing this.
Yeah, obviously he just wants to play football. So, well, you know, it's funny, because maybe if he had waited a week with this Edelman injury, there could have been a spot up in New England.
I thought about that too when Edelman went down yesterday. Hopefully that's not season-ending, but he has a broken bone in his foot.
I know it was so weird. When you look at the replay, though, I didn't see anything in the foot. It looked like the knee torqued. It was a foot for sure.
Yep. Yeah, it was reported this morning that it was a broken bone in his foot, and he walked off the field. I mean, we saw that with Dez too, right?
Yeah, it's like the Liz Frank. That's a bad injury for a receiver when they have to cut and make all those, especially for Edelman.
Yeah, I was just going to say. I mean, Dez is, he does run over the middle of the field, but he's more of a sideline guy, where Edelman's just running 5-yard routes and
he's cutting every 5 feet.
I mean, he might be back for the playoffs, but even then, who knows how healthy he's going to be. That's definitely going to hurt the offense.
It is. I mean, you have Amendola, who's played that role before. So, you know, that's a guy who, I mean, he slotted in last night or yesterday, and I think he had, 10 catches.
He had a great game.
He's not the same guy, but
Edelman's
still
one of those guys that him and Brady are just on the same page. It's kind of hard to replace something like that.
Oh, shut up. It's so ridiculous. I can't handle you talking like this, because you know what's going to happen. They're just going to plug and play, and nothing will be different.
For most guys, I mean, obviously, it's not like if Gronk went down, I think that would be worse. But Edelman's the number two offensive guy in that.
That's fine, but Wes Welker was that guy before, and then Edelman filled in. So Amendola is going to fill in. Or if it's not going to be him, it's going to be probably James White or somebody that they'll just plug into that spot, and everything will just be fine. So
hey, I hope you're right.
I can't. You crying about that is.
I'm not crying. I'm not crying.
Zero emotions for that.
Yeah, I don't expect many people to be sympathetic here.
No, I really hope it doesn't work. Actually, badly. I was a big Giants fan yesterday.
All right, so we do have a ton of stuff to get to. As I said earlier, the baseball GM meetings were this week, and it was a pretty busy week. A lot of, especially for the Yankees, a lot of things happened. It's kind of fun to see. kind of been a slow few weeks after the baseball season ended. I know we talked last week to Rob from Pinstripe Prospect about what sort of the Yankees' options were going into the offseason, and we said that trades and specifically trading some of their minor league guys for and some of their depth guys for major league talent is what he expects to happen. And I know Joel Sherman wrote that as well. He expects the Yankees to be extremely busy this offseason, but not in free agent signings, which is pretty different from, you know, the last 20 years with this team.
Well, and you know something that's interesting too, because last week we talked, when we were talking with Rob, we mentioned a few spots in the minor league system that is just, you know, chock full of talent. And specifically, we're talking about up the middle in the infield. Catcher's a spot that we have a lot of depth. But, you know, not only are we, or has Cashman in this past week traded for major league talent, but he's kind of shuffled the minor league talent as well, where, you know, we saw the Perella, and I know we're going to get more into these trades specifically, but, you know, just on the surface, looking at Perella, who's a middle infielder, utility guy, but not trading him for a major leaguer, but really kind of just doubling down and trading for a minor league guy who is in, you know, A-ball that has a lot of potential. So it's, you know, he's kind of adding to the depth as well, which is, I think, a strong move.
And Perella was one of those guys where, let's be honest, what was his ceiling for the Yankees?
A super utility guy.
Exactly.
We knew. Yeah.
A utility guy. So he's sort of trading low upside for high upside. Obviously, this guy, Ronald Herrera, I mean, I'm not going to even pretend to know anything about him. As you said, he's a minor league pitcher from the Padres. But I think that was sort of, as we talked before the show, also a roster move where he needed, you know, Cashman needed to trade somebody off the 40-man roster to open up spots for him to make trades down the line here.
Yeah, and that's one of those, if you look at the way that the rosters are and for Major League Baseball teams, the way that they have constrictions, I guess, with how many people they can have on the 40-man roster, that does open up a spot, because if you're trading minor league guys for major league guys that are going to potentially be helping this coming year, you need room on that 40-man roster. So a move like this opens up a spot, because Herrera is not going to be on the 40-man roster. He'll be, somewhere in the minor league system. And now there's, you know, flexibility to add guys for the major league roster. So you're going to see stuff like that. You're going to see Cashman being, you know, whether, I mean, I think a couple of guys, Chad Jennings of Lohud, I know, had Perella as a DFA candidate at some point for that exact reason, you know, to open up a spot for the 40-man roster. Because, I mean, let's be honest, I don't think the Yankees really knew what to do with Perella if he was on the major league level. Every time I say Perella, I want to say, you know, what a good fella. But he...
Okay, John Sterling.
He was that guy that they didn't really know what to do with. And yeah, so he was, I think, a likely candidate to be either moved, released. So not too much of a surprise there.
All right, so let's get to the good stuff. They traded John Ryan Murphy to the Twins for outfielder Aaron Hicks. And when this went down, I mean, you would have thought the Yankees just traded, you know, Thurman Munson in his prime. That's how Yankees Twitter was reacting. And I like John Ryan Murphy. I thought he's a very, very good backup catcher and, you know, all that stuff. Seemed like a nice kid, good clubhouse guy and everything. But I think people were overreacting a little bit to the loss of John Ryan Murphy.
I think the John Ryan Murphy post-game celebrations got everybody emotionally attached to
him. That's exactly it.
And the fact also, you know, early in the year, the move from JR to John Ryan, he just got more notoriety than a backup catcher would normally get. And he's a fun loving kid. He shows a lot of exuberance. You know, we saw that with, you know, a lot of the late inning heroics with A-Rod and Murphy. They seemed like they had a good chemistry and a good relationship. So, yeah, I think that Yankee fans kind of attach themselves to this guy. But if you look on the field and what the Yankees did right there, it's a solid move because, one, they get younger in the outfield. They add an athletic kid. Aaron Hicks, who was a former first-round pick, is, he's a young guy. And if you look at his makeup, 6'2", 200 pounds, athletic kid, steal bases. I think he had 13 steals last year. And he can hit against left-handed pitching. So
he's a switch hitter.
Switch hitter, which is terrific for this lineup. You know, it adds a lot of flexibility.
And, I mean, how many times did we say that this outfield, especially guys like Gardner and Ellsbury and obviously Beltran, they all need more rest if they're going to stay healthy. And who knows, maybe this opens up the possibility for them to trade Gardner. But I don't think they have to trade Gardner. I think they can go with four outfielders next year.
No, I totally agree. I think Aaron Hicks slots in that Chris Young role. I mean, Chris Young was lethal against left-handed pitching. Lethal maybe is an overstatement, but he was very good against left-handed pitching. And this is a guy, Hicks, who hit 307 against left-handed pitching last year, has that same type of ability, but does give you more flexibility. I think he's a much better defender. He has to have a better arm. I don't think you can have a worse arm than Chris Young. I mean, his throwing from the outfield was just brutal this year.
They also know what Chris Young is going to be. He's never going to be more than he was last year. Aaron Hicks could, you know,
absolutely
definitely live up to more of the potential that he was drafted with.
Yeah, 26 years old. So you're automatically getting younger. You have a guy that can play multiple positions and gives you some upside. So I think it's a good move. And Chris Young was terrific for this team. I mean, he was exactly what we needed him to be. And I think Aaron Hicks can be that similar guy, I think, just with more upside, like you said, and more flexibility in the field. So
how about the Twins just going for all our backup players? Ryan Murphy, Eduardo Nunez, Phil Hughes. They just love bringing in the Yankees B squad.
Yeah, hey, it's working for them. Phil Hughes had a better season. They've all done better, I think, in Minnesota. So maybe they're thinking that they get the level up from these guys. So look, I hope John Ryan Murphy has a great career. I really do. I like the kid. He was good here, and I wish him the best. Just if we see them, I don't want him to do well in those particular games.
So do you think that, you know, now the Yankees have a hole at backup catcher. So do you see them bringing in maybe a veteran type, a Jose Molina type, not specifically him, but do you remember when they had Jose Molina back there? Or do you think they'll go to their system and maybe have, you know, they still have obviously Gary Sanchez, who's more, you know, projects to be more than a backup catcher, but they could get him some playing time or maybe some of this other, you know, Romine, you know, some of these other depth guys in the system.
Yeah, and I have to look to see what Romine's options are, you know, where he is with that, because I know they brought him back. But that's a guy that's familiar with the system, who can go in there and slot in as a backup. You're going to get good defense from him. You're not going to get much on the offense side. But I honestly think that unless we see another move that I don't know if can happen too much anymore because of the depth now. But I think Gary Sanchez is kind of on the fast track now. I think we might see him in the major leagues. So that's an interesting guy to keep an eye on. But I know Yankee fans are kind of enamored by him now just by seeing what he's doing in the fall. And like we've been talking about this, you know, since the season has ended. We need flexibility. We need guys to get rest. And when you have a guy with the ability of a Gary Sanchez, you know, that's giving more opportunities for McCann to get rest behind the plate, possibly for him to slot in at first base. So I think there's, you know, we're getting a lot more puzzle pieces to play with.
McCann was fried towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to be an equal split between him and a backup catcher. And if it is Sanchez, you know, I don't think it's going to be a 50-50 split. But
no,
there's no reason it can't be 60-40. And, you know, have McCann sort of, like you said, rotate around to DH in first base.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility. So Girardi will be able to tinker and toy like he loves to do with his roster. And, you know, I think McCann going to first base anyway just gives – I think the Yankees want to see him at first base a little bit more, because I think down the road with his contract, he's going to be playing more at first base. You know, I know Bird's the future first baseman, but they want to see what McCann can do there, because he will get time there, I think, as he gets deeper into that contract, and then also at DH. So – yeah, I think there's just more flexibility now. And with Gary Sanchez, with his bat being, it seems to be close to major league ready. You know, I don't know if it's right, if it's there yet. We'll see how he does. But I think if he gets a hot spring training, you know, we're going to see him there for sure.
All right. So this begs the question, what now happens with Brett Gardner? He's been linked to trade rumors, specifically that there was a report that the Yankees have been talking to the Mariners about trading Gardner. But do you see them trading Gardner now?
I think this absolutely opens up the I don't know. I'd say 60% chance that they do trade Gardner.
Okay, so you're past the 50-50 mark.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards it. And one of the big reasons I think why is because obviously we know his contract is movable, and he's a Major League Baseball player. I mean, we know he's a Major League ready talent. now with Hicks in the outfield, what the Yankees have added, Aaron Hicks, and that flexibility, if you look at our system, we have guys like Slade Heathcott who can really just all of a sudden, or Mason Williams, who could kind of play that role as a fourth outfielder or a platoon in left field. And I think they have a lot of flexibility in the outfield right now with youth and similar players to Brett Gardner that to me it just really makes a lot of sense to move him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. He's the most movable player on the major league roster because of his contract situation. Ellsbury is immovable at this point unless you eat the majority of his money, and I don't see the Yankees doing that. So, yeah, Gardner will get you the biggest bang for your buck if you do trade him. I think fans will be pretty upset because he's one of the only homegrown guys on the roster, and he's been there for a while. I mean, he came up in 2008, I think. It's been a long time since he's been in the major leagues. But I think we've seen Gardner probably peak in his career at this point.
Right. I agree with you, and I think that's another reason why they are at a point where they can move him. I mean, I don't think you can understate the fact of the depth in the outfield and similar players to what we have with Mason Williams and Slade Heathcott. And Slade Heathcott, you know, I mean, we know that he has been injured in the past, and he's kind of got a history of injuries. But he's a very good player. He's a good outfielder. And we've seen the bat. I mean, we've seen some big hits. He's a fiery guy. He's a very similar player to Brett Gardner. So I would not be surprised. And the more I'm talking about it, the more I think my percentages are actually going higher of them trading Gardner at some point.
Would you like to see them get a more of a prospect package or more of a ready to help you now package?
Prospects. I think I'd like to see some more prospects. I'd like to load up on arms as much as possible.
Yeah, I think that's what I've read that the Cashman is really targeting is young arms that they can control for not a lot of money. Obviously, yeah, that's what everyone wants.
Right, and you're seeing now the importance of having a deep bullpen and a deep bullpen of later in the season where guys can help you out. I mean, we rolled out the Nick Rumbelows of the world, and we saw what they did. They were very mediocre at the end of the season. Now, while that may help them in the future because they've got that major league experience for a little while, and it very well could, but I think having a solid system of guys who can come in and we can groom and contribute at some point, whether it's in the rotation or in the bullpen, I think is extremely important. And I don't see a lot more room on the starting lineup as far as offensively for guys that we need major league ready at this point.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. So, you know, talking about free agency, the Yankees probably won't be in on a David Price or a Johnny Cueto or anybody of that sort of level. I would at least be very surprised if I saw them hand out $200 million to a guy like that. But somebody that I have seen rumors are who's kind of on the next level down is Wei-Yin Chen, who's the lefty, kind of crafty lefty from the Orioles, who always seems to pitch six scoreless innings against the Yankees, and I don't quite know how, because I look at his ERA and it's like 4.2. But there's been rumors that the Yankees might be interested in that guy.
Yeah, he's always been a Yankee killer. He's always pitched very well. Like you said, six innings, no runs. It seems like that's what he does out of the gate against the Yankees time and time again. So he's an interesting player. Now, I know that there's a first-round pick attached to him, so that's why I do not see the Yankees going after him. I think a lot of that is kind of smoke and mirrors. I don't see the Yankees giving the division rivals, Orioles, a first-round pick to play with.
And, I mean, that's huge. I mean, if you're going to give up a first-round pick for a compensation pick, it might as well be for somebody who's a little bit better than Wei-Yin Chen.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he's going to slot in. If he were to come over here, he would slot in, what, 4 or 5? And that's just, to me, not worth it at that point.
You're overpaying for a back-of-the-rotation guy.
Exactly. And the other thing is that we've seen so many young guys. I honestly think over the past 5 years that we're seeing so many more young guys contribute faster than we've seen in the past. And, you know, maybe that's going to like development of the youth leagues and how these guys are coming out and obviously no more steroids. So it's kind of leveling the playing field a little bit more. But we're seeing younger guys contribute a lot faster than we have in the past. And a first round pick to me is just too valuable at this point.
So, I mean, the Orioles are in an interesting situation. You know, one thing we also have to keep an eye on in this offseason is some of the other teams in our division and what they do. The Orioles are probably going to lose Chen, and they might lose Chris Davis as well. So they could really take a step back next year.
No, absolutely. And I thought this year was a year that they were going to take a step back, and it seemed like they did. Because it seems like they've never really gotten their pitching staff together.
It's always been a collection of guys who are just like very big question marks who just kind of keep you in the game and let that offense go to work.
Yeah, until they get traded to the Cubs, and then they become Cy Young candidates. But it's funny because speaking of obviously Jake Arrieta, who was not the same pitcher when he went over to Chicago that we saw in Baltimore. I don't know what the big change was, but he definitely was a different guy when he left. But that's one thing that the Orioles, if they do lose a lot of their offensive power, I mean, I thought Nelson Cruz last year was going to be a huge hole in their lineup. Chris Davis definitely took a lot of that support and kind of added it back because he had a down year when Nelson Cruz was on fire with the Orioles. So that definitely helped a lot. Chris Davis's bat not being in that lineup is going to be a big deal for them.
Yeah, but I also think whoever signs Chris Davis is going to have to give him $100 million and they're going to regret it because this guy is a 200 strikeout a year guy and that just does not play right now in baseball. I mean, look at the Royals. They don't strike out at all. They won a World Series. I mean, yeah, he can hit 35 bombs for you. But I mean, that kind of offense was more around in 2005, not 2015.
Yeah, and I think we saw a lot of that with the Yankees this year, just because we were so live and die by the long ball, and if it didn't happen, we didn't have very many guys on base. And you're right. The way that baseball is trending, it's more of the sabermetrics: get on base, get them up, get them over, get them in. Type of baseball, and he just does not add to that. But yeah, their big thing is their pitching, and you're seeing a lot of their prospects. The guys like Dylan Bundy, who just got hurt again. He's been continuously hurt, and their prospects are just not working out for them. And that's going to be a big problem for them because they kind of have to reset their minor league system in the sense of pitching. I mean, they just don't have the pitching.
They may have missed their window, the Orioles. Winning a championship, just because you see the division, the Red Sox and Yankees were down, and the Orioles won the division, but they couldn't really get over the hump in the playoffs. And Adam Jones, kind of probably their best player, he's not getting any better each year. I mean, not saying he's getting worse, but he's probably in his prime now. I mean, I guess Machado is
definitely there too.
But yeah. I mean, they're going to lose, like we said, Chris Davis, Wei-Yin Chen. You know, who knows? I really don't see them being a contender for the division next year.
No, and I think in a couple more years I don't think they're going to be very good. I think they're going to be kind of basement dwellers. Yankee fans who like to travel to Baltimore are going to get their $10 seats back first five rows.
Yeah.
In Camden Yards, and those were the glory days when you could go to Baltimore and sit behind the third base dugout for like $15.
Absolutely, yeah. I remember I went on a trip, this had to have been 2005 or 2006. I went for a trip with my family, and we bought tickets for the Saturday game, like, online. And we get there Friday afternoon, and we're like, you want to just see if there's tickets? And we went up, I think we paid like $25, and yeah, like you said, we were like infield about 40 rows back. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, my brother used to live in Baltimore, and he was getting his master's degree there, so he was in school. And they had a student special. This was like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. It was just before they got good, so maybe it was a little bit longer than that. But so they would sell the students tickets for like, I swear to God, like $4. And he would text me pictures, and he'd be sitting like 10 rows back. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, just get him in the stadium.
Yeah, and you can always move up too. Yeah, you can always move up in that place. So. Yeah, so hopefully we'll have if they start sucking again, we should start some road trips going.
Yeah, maybe that'll be the Bronx Pinstripe road trip.
Perfect. Let's do it. We could take over Camden Yards.
So the other team in the division that made a splash this week was the Sox. They traded for Craig Kimbrel, who was linked to the Yankees, especially at the deadline. Kimbrel is locked up through the 2017 season, and then the Red Sox will have an option on him for the 2018 season. But they traded two pretty high prospects in their system. I think I read that the shortstop prospect they traded was ranked fifth in their system, and then the center field prospect was ranked seventh in the system. So two top seven guys for a closer who signed to big money. It was definitely a need for them because their bullpen was all, the whole pitching staff was awful.
Right.
So that definitely fills a need. But, you know, if we put it into Yankee terms, that would be like trading Greg Bird and Jorge Mateo for Craig Kimbrell.
Well, the difference is the depth, right? So the shortstop, yes. The shortstop is a guy like, yes, you have Bogarts in front of you, so that's what seems to be their long term shortstop. You never know. You want some depth there, but the outfield prospect, I mean, they have, it seems like every single day they have a new outfielder coming out that's just a stud. You know, that's and a young kid. I mean, with the guy they got from Cuba, and then the two Betts and Jackie Bradley Jr. Yeah. They have their outfield is completely stacked. I mean, that's probably the fastest outfield that I've seen in a very long time in Major League Baseball. So they have a lot of depth in their system when it comes to that. I'm surprised that they gave up guys like that for a closer, to tell you the truth. I thought they were going to be they were going to turn a lot more of these prospects into a starting pitcher.
That's the Dombrowski way. I mean, he's fine with trading young talent for established veterans.
But
he did that in Detroit.
Yeah, I know, but I'm surprised they did it in the back of the bullpen and not the front of the rotation. That's where I thought they were going to be going. Why? Because you got to get to the back of the bullpen.
Yeah, that's good. That's got to be their next step. There's no way the Red Sox are coming out of this offseason without have signed either David Price, Jordan Zimmermann, Johnny Cueto, somebody like that.
Yeah, and the back of their pen is definitely getting older. You know, I think he's their closer. Koji was, how old is he? 42?
40, yeah. He's past
40. He's 40 plus. And he was injured this past year. So we're definitely going to see him move into the eighth inning. And, you know, he's another year older. So who knows what he's going to be if he can continue what he had done in the past.
His contract might be up, too. I think they signed him to a 2-year deal after the 2013 season.
I saw reports of him being okay moving to the eighth inning. He's locked up, I think, for at least one more year. I don't know what his contract is, but so they will probably have that eighth, ninth inning guy. But you know, look, Kimbrel's another guy who's never pitched in the American League. So he went from the Braves to the Padres, and I don't know how much that makes a difference.
I don't think the back end. It doesn't make. My opinion is it doesn't play as much in the bullpen as it does in the rotation. It actually might even help because the hitters haven't seen him as much.
Yeah, but they'll have. I mean, they'll see him. You know, after the first month of the season, 2 months of the season, and the American League just has more guys who are able to hit the long ball at the end of the game or get on base or whatnot. So I don't know. It probably doesn't play that much into it, but I was surprised when I heard the deal, to tell you the truth.
All I know is Yankee fans, be ready to be annoyed by this guy and his setup with his arm hanging out and he sort of bends over, sort of, you know, brings me back to Papelbon face, Papelbon, which annoyed the crap out of me. And now it's going to be Kimbrell arm or whatever.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how the rest of their lineup shakes out. I mean, offensively, they really started turning it on at the end of the year, the Red Sox. And but their biggest bugaboo was the beginning, the rotation. I mean, they had a bunch of, number three guys. And that's, I think, being generous.
And yeah, exactly. They're going to need to sign a number one pitcher or else they're going to be, I think they'll be better than last year, but they're not going to compete for the division with a bunch of number four and five, number three, four, five starters.
Do you see them sign? I mean, Price and Dombrowski have a history. Do you see them signing Price or a Cueto?
Yes. They'll get either Cueto, Price or Zimmermann. I would probably,
or Greinke.
I don't see them signing Greinke only because, first of all, I think the Dodgers re-sign Greinke. I honestly think there's some hesitation with Greinke and his mental makeup and also coming back to the American League. If I had to rank it, I would say the Red Sox go Price is their number one target, Cueto is their number two target, and then Zimmermann would be their number three.
Yeah. Yeah, I see Price. I see a Price Boston. For some reason, he loves the American League East. I don't see him leaving it.
And, hey, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you Price isn't a good pitcher, but his playoff record is not good, and he did not have a good playoffs this year with the Blue Jays. So I know we talked about this and that it shouldn't hurt it. You don't think it'll hurt his value. No. I still think he's going to get huge money. But if I was a team, I would be pretty worried about it.
I just don't want to see him anymore because he's proof that he can beat the Yankees. You know, over the past the second half of the year, whenever David Price played the New York Yankees, we lost the game. So it seemed like he was, you know, I know he had a terrible record and extremely bloated ERA against the Yankees before the second half of this year when he went to Toronto. But for whatever reason, he turned it on and he looked like a different guy against us. So, you know, hopefully the Yankees can, you know, shake up their roster a little bit and be not so left-handed heavy and be able to, you know, make that adjustment for a left-handed pitcher. So we'll see what happens. But to me, I personally wouldn't mind if he left the AL East.
So one of the teams is going to – so the Blue Jays are probably going to lose Price, so they're going to take a step back. But then the Red Sox are probably going to sign a good pitcher, so they're going to take a step forward. So, you know, obviously it's still early, but I still see the American League East sort of all clumped together next year.
Yeah, it's going to be another dogfight. The Toronto Blue Jays roster, as far as their offense, is still going to be stacked. I mean, these guys are not going anywhere. So their offense is still going to be filthy.
Plus a full year of Tulo up.
Exactly.
Up there.
Yeah, and you know, that lineup can absolutely carry a team. And they're going to lose Burley, too, I think. So Burley will be gone.
Is he retiring?
There were talks of him retiring. Then I heard him going to St. Louis because it's his hometown, which I could totally see. He just seems like a perfect fit for the St. Louis Cardinals.
God, and you know he'll win like 14 games.
Exactly. Yeah, he'll win more than that probably. I mean, he seems like a perfect fit for one more year over there, especially with the injury to Lance Lynn. They need another starting pitcher. So. So they're losing a lot of their rotation. They'll have another full year from, you know, some of their young guys. And but that offense can carry a team. And if they can just get decent pitching, they're going to be right there in it.
Yes. It's kind of been an exciting offseason thus far, even though it's still very, very early.
I see more moves coming. I see a lot more moves coming. I think Cashman is going to be aggressive. I agree with a lot of the beat guys saying that they're going to be aggressive with the trades. You know, now Yankee fans probably are a little bit hesitant to hear that because they don't want to get rid of a lot of their young talent. But I still see them going after guys, but using our depth. I don't think you're going to see a lot of like the big names that we're really, really excited about getting moved.
And I'm totally being moved. Yes, I agree with that. I thought you were going to say. Being signed.
No, that too, but I don't see a lot of the big names in our system being moved. I don't see the Judges, the Birds.
No, I mean, unless it's for a impact player on your roster now,
right.
I'd be pretty pissed.
Yeah, and I don't see that guy out there. So second base to me is still just a complete mystery. I don't know what they're going to do or what, you know, obviously there's so many hesitations about Ref Snyder. So honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if they traded Ref Snyder. I hope it doesn't happen, but it would not surprise me if they did something at second base.
Honestly, what would be the point? Okay, Ref Snyder, we all love Ref Snyder. We think that he can be a very solid second baseman, but what is his value on the open market? Are you really going to get an impact player for a Ref Snyder unless you package him with somebody else?
Well, that's exactly it. I think he's
going to get packaged. So doesn't he have more value to the Yankees seeing if he can play the position versus trading him?
I totally agree. I mean, I think he's got more value even if he was in AAA and stayed at the position for a year and gave you a full year so that you could see what he does. I think there's a lot more value to hold on to him than get rid of him. But if he's packaged into a deal, I could see that going down.
Like a Gardner plus Ref Snyder package,
exactly.
Or something?
Something like that. Something like that I could see working, you know, or Cashman has. But just because I don't know what they're doing at second base. It's still there's
no
just
one,
so much
no
speculation.
One, dude, yeah. No one knows what they're doing at second base,
right? So who knows, man?
They're keeping it tight under wraps. Kind of Cashman's being mysterious with that position.
They definitely are. They you know the Ackley Ref Snyder platoon has surfaced, but that's, you know, who knows with that? That's such a cop out answer. Oh yeah, there's going to be a platoon. So that's a non answer to me. I know people have been having fun with this one, and I don't really see it happening. But it's been all over different media reports of an Ellsbury Cano flip,
right.
with someone eating contract because both contracts are you know. Extremely, extremely large, and each player is probably not going to live up to those contracts. But you know, with Cano not having the greatest year or a couple years over there, and then Gardner being Ellsbury being from the Seattle area, you know,
I think he's from Oregon, right?
Yeah, Yes. Well, he's from that area, the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest. So
I love how we call Oregon the Seattle area, but we would never call like Washington D.C. the New York area. But it's essentially the same mileage.
It's completely tucked into
everything west of the Mississippi is the same.
Exactly. Above California, it's all the same up there. But yeah, so that's something that's like a sexy thing to think about that could be.
I don't see that happening.
I don't see it happening either.
That would be Cashman admitting mistake, and I certainly don't see that happening.
Well, on two fronts. I mean, I don't know, because they'd be coming back with Cano, and I think Yankee fans would be very okay with that.
Right. They'd be saying, okay, this was a mistake to not sign Cano, and it was also a mistake to sign Ellsbury.
Yeah, but I don't see it happening. I mean, if you pulled that one off, that would be a Christmas miracle, but I don't see it happening. I mean, Cano is absolutely more valuable to the Yankees than he is to the Seattle Mariners. There's no doubt about it.
And he's also, he's a better player, even though he had a down year for him. He's a better player than Ellsbury.
Yes, but he's also a better player here than he is there.
Well, yeah.
No doubt. I mean, he just fits this lineup so much more and this stadium so much more. So
Ellsbury has some making up to do as well.
He does have some making up to do.
To the Yankees. To the Yankee fans, I think.
I think to everybody. He really has a lot to prove at this point. I mean, because he's shown nothing compared to what that contract...
He's played two seasons. Obviously, he's been hurt. But I would say he's played a month and a half of good baseball. He had a really good start to this season. And if you remember last year, they plugged him into the number three hole at some point in the middle of the season. And he had a really good, 3-4 weeks. And other than that, it's been below average.
Yeah, I agree. And especially for that contract, when you're looking at expectations, he hasn't touched it. But, I mean, we've seen what he can do in small spurts. So if for some way this guy can put it together for a long stretch and a longer period, then, we have an absolutely dynamic player. But he hasn't proved that in a long time.
So it's hard to
think that that's going to happen.
I think what is very alluring to the Yankees management and Joe Girardi is that they saw how successful Ellsbury Gardner at the top of the order can be.
Right.
The first 2 months of the season, whatever it was, however many games until Ellsbury got hurt, that was dynamic. It was probably the best 1-2 in baseball. But how long can they expect that to hold up next year?
I mean, we saw that this year. Both guys, Gardner fell off, Ellsbury got hurt, and then when he came back was never even remotely close to a similar player or even any kind of an impact bat. I mean, the two of them were getting benched, and we just didn't know who was going to play because they were both equally as bad. So it was, you just can't expect it.
0% chance they stay healthy and good all next year.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And I just don't see it. That's why I think that one of these guys gets moved, and the likely candidate is Brett Gardner. So,
all right. So we did not receive any voicemails or mailbags this week, but I want to try something that'll hopefully get some more action in the mailbags going forward. So I want to pose a question of the week, and then I want to ask everyone listening to submit answers to the question either through the mailbag link on the website or through Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is. And I'll post this question on Twitter and stuff so you can see it. But the question simply is, if you were Brian Cashman, what would be your number one move in the offseason? Everyone's loves to play GM. So we'll read those on next episode. Hopefully we get some submissions there.
Yeah, definitely. I think playing GM is one of the more fun things to do in the offseason, especially now with all the rumors swirling and all the beat guys trying to make headlines looking for the one rumor that hits or their one insider tip that hits. So we should see what happens. It's going to be an interesting offseason from here on. We've already had some good spark, with a few names that we all know, and bringing back some good talent. I think Cashman's done so good so far. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, everybody keep your ear to the ground. Don't be fooled on Twitter by fake reports, fake Ken Rosenthal's or whatever. I always love when I get those retweeted onto my timeline. But it's fun to play manager April to September, October, and then it's fun to play GM the rest of the year.
Yeah, and one thing that we're going to be doing in this offseason, and check this probably, I'd say, middle of December, just before the holidays, but we're going to open up a forum, a Yankees forum on BronxPinstripes.com, where we're a few things. We're going to have a lot of conversations about potential moves and just getting more of the Yankee fans and guys who are on Twitter – who've respond to a lot of things that we put on, but have more of a lengthy conversation that you can have in a forum and more of a discussion. Obviously, you're not restricted by the Twitter character limit, and you can just have more of a discussion and get to know more Yankee fans. And I know Pinstripe Prospects is going to be very involved in the forum as well. So we're going to have a lot of the insiders for the prospects involved in that forum, and then a lot of the Yankee writers on Bronx Pinstripes are going to be involved. So definitely check that out and keep that in mind. You know, coming up in the next few weeks, we're going to be getting that involved. I'm kind of building it out right now, so it's a good place for us to have good conversations.
Sounds awesome. And don't forget to call the voicemail line. Let's see if I can remember the number this week. 646-480-0342.
Got it.
Yes. I listened back to what I said, and I think an alien took over my body, and I said random
you
numbers.
Had a stroke.
I don't know what happened. Because those last four of those numbers are no numbers associated to me.
I have no idea what was going on there. I was like,
I don't know, man. Maybe I was sleeping.
We now know Andrew's pin to his bank
account. You guys figured it out. All right, man. Any last words?
No, that's it. I'm looking forward to see what Cashman does leading forward, man. And I'm looking forward to more speculation. Speculation is fun.
Yes, yes. All right, good stuff. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.